Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 245. Joining me all the way from Denver, Colorado is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Hello. Just meet me at the riverside.
Okay. Is that a...
Meet me by the river's edge.
Uh-huh. That's a Denver thing.
No, the program we're using to record is called Riverside.
You know what? You're right. It is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. You're peeling back the curtain a little bit. All right. Well, you know, let's keep pulling it back. It's Sunday, March 26th. It's 6:13. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking a cup of coffee.
5:13. I'm drinking
5:13 in Denver. Ryan, you ran a few miles today, I think, at least, right?
I did. Mm-hmm. I'm training for a half marathon.
All right. Very good.
And by training, I mean, I'm training not to die. Like, not, I'm not like trying to win. I'm trying to not die when I do it in May. So,
yeah, I don't think you're going to die. I think you've done it before, haven't you?
My current record is I've done a 10 miler. Mm-hmm. And my current personal record is 12 and a half miles. So I'm working up to that 13.1. So
cool. Well, your personal record's about double mine. So that's impressive. Well done. Mm. Yeah. Just accept your flowers, Ryan. I said it's impressive, sure. You know, just, yeah. Hell yes, I'm impressive. Also impressive, chapter 20 of The Mandalorian, directed by Carl Weathers. It is called The Foundling, which we knew ahead of time, thanks to Carl Weathers being a little chatty online, which I appreciated. But yeah, it's called The Foundling, and we're going to spend the bulk, or maybe the majority of this episode, discussing The Foundling. So let's get into it. Ryan, I think you said you hated this episode, right? You were mad about it? You didn't like this episode? Is that
no,
what you said?
That was California Chris.
Oh, okay. California Chris.
Decidedly not impressed by this episode. Yeah. After mostly you hyped it up in the group chat, like, to impossible levels.
I don't think it's impossible levels. I simply said...
I knew that backlash was coming. I could feel it. That backdraft.
I woke up, as always, early in the morning, 5 a.m., whatever. Mm-hmm. I watched the episode. I proceeded to text you guys. I said, hey, I watched it, and I shit my pants. That's it, you know? Yeah. I didn't say, like, it's the most amazing episode of all time. You know, it was just... my pants were shit. You know, that's what I said. Because it was... Yeah. There's a moment we're going to talk about where my pants were shit. I mean, I was hyped.
Figuratively. Ultra hyped.
Yeah, figuratively, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, let's just go through this one. I have my chronological notes here. It is a very straightforward narrative, like, besides a flashback sequence in the middle, a la Citizen Kane. So let's just get into, let's just go through, like, chronologically and
the Citizen Kane of Mandalorian episodes in season three.
Yeah, and before anybody in the comments, there are never comments, by the way, but before anybody in the comments is like, Citizen Kane does not feature a flashback in the middle. I know that. It features flashbacks and time jumps all throughout the complex narrative written by Orson Welles. So that's why I said that. Yeah.
This narrative, not so complex.
right.
Especially compared to last week. So I think, like, just... stating in, like, general terms, I liked this episode. I loved the moment in the middle of the episode, but overall, I don't feel like it gave us too much to chew on, really. I liked it. I think it was a good episode of The Mandalorian with an amazing 5 minutes in the middle.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if you take the sequence in the middle with Baby Grogu and his flashback to Order 66, if you take that out, this episode was fine, but not necessarily like anything special in comparison to other Mandalorian episodes. But I think, you know, like, I'm good with that for sure, because, you know, I think whatever they did in the rest of the episode, if they tried to go, like, super, you know, intense with the rest of it, or do, you know, big stuff otherwise, I feel like it would have been overshadowed by the Order 66 thing anyway, you know. So that's the main event, that's the that's the entree you know, in this episode. So I think that's fine, and the rest of the stuff is good too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when you get, when you're watching like a pay-per-view or something, and there's just this like match like in the middle of the card that is just unexpectedly fantastic and just like mind-blowing, and then, you know, then the rest of the card you're like, oh yeah, cool, okay, well, yep, there's the main event, yeah, that's about what I expected, okay,
right, sure. A show stealer. Every once in a while you have a show stealer, yeah, of a match and a pay-per-view, yeah, which was unexpected. Yeah, for sure. You know, I feel like The Last of Us had that kind of situation, the HBO show The Last of Us. I didn't necessarily feel that way quite as much, but, well, there was a show stealer episode for sure in that season.
Episode 3.
Yeah, right. But yeah, also, like, a lot of people were expressing disappointment with the finale. We talked about it, Ryan. I didn't feel that way. I don't think you did either. But
no. I mean, it was just the ending of the game. Like,
yeah. But still, a lot of people who played the game were saying it was rushed or whatever. And, you know, I haven't played the game. So I think even my wife felt like it was a little, maybe not. I don't know. She's so in love with Pedro Pascal right now, I don't think she cares, to be honest. Like, whatever Pedro wants to do, I think is fine.
That
with
is
her. Yeah.
That is our national mood right now.
Yeah. And she is patriotic. In that sense. All right. Well, let's get into it and just kind of go through here chronologically. So the opening of the episode features a training sequence, and I thought it was cool. I thought it was fun. Not gonna lie, I felt like a little bit of Jedi Dan vibes in the opening sequence there with the training on the beach. The Mandalorians all kind of look the same. They're all wearing armor and stuff, right? But still, it was just like, we got a bunch of these dudes and they're all doing real cool moves together, like in a small space, so, you know?
Dandalorians.
Yeah. No, hey, yes. Well done. Mm-hmm. Well done. You came up with that right off the top of the dome there, and that was great. Yes. Dandalorians. Yes. Just because it felt like a lot of extras, you know what I mean, on the beach there doing their Mandalorian stuff. And you know, it was fun. It was fine, but it was fun. But I was, for opening moments, opening shots, I was kind of like, what are we doing here? You know, but this is Carl Weathers, and it did have like definitely like 80s action sequence vibes too, you know, or 80s action movie vibes. Like, I could imagine a Karate Kid movie where everybody and, you know, the Miyagi dojo is like out there training and, you know what I mean? I don't know if there's a scene like that in Karate Kid or not, but you get my point, right? It had just like that fun kind of 80s action movie, like, kind of feeling.
Yeah. I was thinking, I was wondering, is it an homage to Rocky 3? Is Rocky 3 the one where Carl Weathers and Sylvester Stallone are training on the beach?
You know, I don't know. That is a good question. If I've ever seen Rocky 3, it was a really long time ago. I watched Rocky 1 like a week or two, but...
Oh, nice. Yeah. Great movie.
Which one has the robot? I think that's Rocky 2. One of them has a robot.
Yeah.
I think it's Rocky 2.
Yeah.
All right, well... so from there, they cut to Grogu. And I didn't even notice this on my first viewing, to be honest, or pick up on the intention here. But I think... The Grogu's sitting on the beach and there's all these stones around him, and it's like he's using the Force, you know, like he's practicing the Force. But by the end of the scene, like, it turns out there's just like little space crabs under them.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even doing anything. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, he was moving those stones. Oh, cute. There's crabs under it. But the second time I was like, oh, wait, no. The intention there is like he was never even using the Force, right? He was just watching the crabs, like
just
a little cute little guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
No, yeah, that was fun. No, I'm fine with it either way. It doesn't bother me, but I missed it the first time. So then they cut to Din, and Din comes over and he's like, all right, time to stop being a child, Grogu. Like, you don't get to be a little boy anymore. You got to train, you know? And he specifically tells him, I mean, he doesn't say that, but he does specifically tell him, if you're ever to move past being a foundling, you got to start training with everyone else, you know? So Din is like kind of looking at Grogu, I think, at this point and thinking, time for you to level up, you know what I mean? You need to go from being a little kid to being more like a teenager, you know, or something along those lines. Like, start training with the other with the other kids. And I suppose, you know, Jimmy Fallon's or Jimmy Kimmel's nephew, who we saw, the kid who went through the ritual, like, this is the way, you know, I promise I'll never take my helmet off, all that stuff. That's Jimmy Kimmel's nephew.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
I did not know that. No.
Oh.
I know precious little Jimmy Kimmel trivia.
Well, you need to level up. Yeah, if you're ever going to move past being a Jimmy Kimmel foundling, you got to learn some more trivia. And if you spent a little more time in our Discord, Ryan, I believe we discussed that in the Discord. Ooh. At some point.
Yikes.
So, yeah, you're not doing your homework. But it would have been a few weeks ago when that episode aired with that foundling. But anyway, you know, like, he went from being a foundling to the next level, right? He did the creed in the water and all that. And then, you know, now he's training. So I think in retrospect, obviously, like, that's what Din wants to see Grogu doing, right? Like, okay, level up to the next, you know, status or whatever. And yeah, I thought that was, I mean, that makes sense. It's logical, I suppose. I wasn't sure what to expect, though, when he brought him over and he was like, okay, you're going to train with this guy and Bo-Katan, and I can't remember if the armor or two, but Bo-Katan anyways. I think Bo-Katan and Paz Vizsla are both like, are you sure? Like, this is a, like, this little frog dude is going to, you sure about that? So I don't, what did you think there? Like, I didn't know, is Grogu going to be able to do this? Is Grogu going to accidentally, like, break this kid's neck? Like, what's going to happen here? You know, like, what's going to be the outcome?
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like kind of, I don't know, like, a bit of like a tropey scene. I think, like, where kind of the way it played out was kind of just the vibe I had from that scene. So yeah, I wasn't like tense or anything during.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah, I just, I wouldn't say I was tense. I wasn't sure, you know, what's going to go on here. Like, is this going to show us that Grogu is ready to train? Is it going to show us that Din is pushing him too soon and he's not ready to train? You know, I don't know. But it was, Grogu was highly emotive, very adorable, as he's looking back and forth between Din and even Bo-Katan, which I thought was interesting too, because it was a little bit like, I'm looking at mom and dad here, you know? Mm. And she tells him, it's okay, your dad's just proud of you. You know, he just wants to show you off. He's just proud of you, which... I'm like, okay, man, this is really like,
it's really sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she hasn't earned that parental status the way Din has yet, but they really are putting her kind of in that co-parenting position these couple episodes, I feel like, you know?
Yeah.
Which those who are, shipping it, I guess would be, you know, probably like to see that. But well, anyway, Grogu schools this kid, you know, and in typical like Karate Kid fashion, you know, he loses the first few points and then he comes back and destroys this kid.
Yep.
And he does the jumping move that you like so well, Ryan. So he did that like back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, you know, it is, it's 2002 forever. Here, we got little green men flipping around, looking weird.
Yeah. And there was this whole back and forth too with Paz Vizsla and his son in that scene where he was like, "One doesn't speak unless one knows." And the kid got schooled at the end, and then Paz Vizsla told him like, "One doesn't speak unless one knows." You know, I think it was him who told him that. I remember like, especially on the second viewing, I was like, "Okay, there is some tension between these two." Which is, you know, obviously relevant because of the events of the rest of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And at
the emotional
point,
reunion,
like, we don't know that's his son.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Truth be told, like, it wasn't until the second episode that I even, like, I guess by the very end of the first viewing, I realized there was a connection between the two of them, but like, I don't think I even really remembered this opening scene with the one doesn't speak unless one knows and all that stuff. I mean, I remembered the scene existed, but like, or happened, but I don't know that I remembered that those two specifically were involved in it. And that scene at the end was kind of like you know, the conclusion of what was started in the beginning and all that. I think it took the second viewing before I even picked up on that. So, but yeah, once that happens, that kid is like a sitting duck, and a big old dragon comes in and totally snaps him up and steals him away. Dragons, space dragons, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we haven't seen a dragon like that before, have we? In Star Wars?
No. I mean, there's, like, the crate dragon.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely dragons in Star Wars.
Sure, sure, sure.
But this is, like, a weird, like, dragon-vulture hybrid thing happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, the dragon picks a kid up, and then the Mandalorians kind of scramble, but not quite as quickly as you might expect them to scramble, considering there's a dragon, like, stealing that kid away. And that, that was something that I was picking up on the whole kind of episode, was, like, they really seem to feel like this dragon, like, they must have their own, like, ritual where it's like, we won't eat a child for at least 7 days after we steal him. This is the way, or something. Because...
Yeah, they're like, here we go again.
Well, there was that, and all, like, this happens all the time or something. There was that. But then there was also just this sense of, like, okay, we have a lot of time. Not a lot of time, but, like, as long as we get there within a certain amount of time, he won't have eaten him yet. You know what I mean? If it's my kid, I'm like, he might be eating him right now. You know what I mean? Like, but that's not how they talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, you know, very TV movie type thing.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, so we still have this flashback to do. So we're just going to tell you right now, like, there's no danger at the moment. We'll get back to it in a little bit. So we're just going to, like, chill. So you don't have to be, like, stressed out thinking about it, because we're about to show you something else now.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I mean, the armorer does, like, she's like, okay, like, you're going to go. Bo-Katan actually offers, I think, right away, like, okay, well, no, they pop off on their jetpacks and they start following the dragon. And then for whatever reason, everybody's jetpack runs out of fuel around the same time, which is not, I guess maybe that they have a certain amount of range, you know, and that's as far as they can go. Their jetpacks run out of fuel, but Bo-Katan can go a little further. So she does, she sees where the dragon went. She comes back and she's like, look, I know where he took him. Like, I can lead a party. We can go out and do it. So that's what they do. And I feel like, again, like, for the second week in a row, at least, there's, like, some real respect and collaboration between the armorer and Bo-Katan. Did you feel that way as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, like, the purpose, or one of the purposes of this whole sequence, especially at the end. Because, like, yeah, like, it's Bo-Katan earning the trust and showing that she can be a leader, kind of thing, which I think is the story they're telling.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so at that point, the armorer kind of tells Grogu, if I'm remembering correctly, the armorer tells Grogu, like, okay, well, you know, you're not old enough to go there yet, or you can't go out there yet, so, you know, follow me. And they go into her, what do you call it? Like, where she does the hammering and the smelting. The forge. Yeah, they go to the forge, right? And she starts telling him, like, you know, hey, every member of the clan, or every Mandalorian donates a little bit of their Beskar to the foundlings. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way. And I'm going to make you another piece of armor here. And so, of course, like, in that process of making that, forging that armor... you know, Grogu starts to, and there's that, like, there's like a house style, or like a way of filming these sequences that they use anytime they do it, which is cool. There's like a visual language with, like, the sort of the way they dissolve or transition between shots, and there's like this, I don't know exactly, I have to slow it down and study exactly what they're doing, like, shot by shot there, but it has a very, like, standard or repeated kind of visual language every time they do one of these armor or forging sequences.
Yeah, it makes it feel a bit like there's, like, this, like, dreamlike transition where like there's, like, a soft focus on some parts of the shot, And like some things start to get kind of like blurred out, and there's like the audio, like the repetitive audio of like the hammer and stuff that's happening here. Yeah.
Speaking of repetitive audio, my 13-year-old is blasting a Neutral Milk Hotel record in his bedroom above BR HQ here. So
wow.
Hopefully that's not getting picked up on the
yeah. That's weird. The aeroplane over the sea of this episode. I generally like these scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, we, like you were saying, we've had a few. But I think there's like this one, I think was just, it was really well shot, really well written. Cause I like the, you know, the metaphor of like the forging and the armor's talking about like, we all begin as raw ore. And yep. Through our experiences, we are like tempered into steel or Beskar or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was just like really good. And it like, you kind of like, I don't know, like the first part of the episode, it's just like, yeah, things are happening. Like this is a like Mandalorian episode. But then like this one, it like during this scene, it like starts to be like really intentional about the pacing, and like you're like hanging on every word, and you're like, there's just these like close-up shots of Grogu's face like reacting, and like you start to get that feeling like, oh, this is getting tense, and then you know, it's really kind of setting you up for what comes next.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's every time they've done an extended sequence of the armor forging something or not, but definitely they did this with Din, right, where he's like remembering his, you know, what forged him, right? It was that formative experience of being rescued by, you know, the Mandalorians when his parents were killed, and that, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, right, that whole flashback or whatever was told through this like forging, you know, sequence. And of course, same thing with Grogu here. And I don't remember for sure, but maybe they've done that with other characters, or maybe they've done more than one with Din where they're doing that. Or so anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't remember for sure if sometimes they do the whole forging, you know, sequence and they don't have a flashback along with it. And then, you know, but for sure, when they did Din's backstory, origin story, they did this forging thing, and now they've done it again with Grogu.
Yeah, because his was like, it was like a slow rollout. Like you got like
over multiple episodes,
a piece each episode in season one. And it seems like that's what's going to happen with Grogu here. But
correct, because we have not seen him be taken to Padme and Jar Jar Binks and Boss Nass and Oda Gunga yet. So
exactly.
So until that happens, yeah. Well, anyway, let's talk about Order 66 and this sequence. You know, I think a lot of us have been very excited about it since Celebration or at least since the first Mandalorian trailer. I can't remember if this, I think this was in the trailer shown at Celebration.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, there was
maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, for whatever, I mean, it was definitely in the first Mando season 3 trailer, like that was shown to everybody, right?
Right, yeah.
And so we see these Jedi in Order 66, you know, in the temple. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty clear that it would be a flashback to Order 66. So we've been anticipating that. Obviously, you know, most assumed it would have to do with Grogu and him being rescued. And so there's been all this anticipation about, you know, what is it going to reveal about Order 66? What's it going to reveal about Grogu? How and why did he get out of the temple? And so a lot of buildup, a lot of anticipation. And boy, Ryan, for my money, it delivered. It gave a very satisfying answer to that question. I know for a long time people have been saying, well, maybe it's going to be a Quinlan Vos, right? It could be Quinlan Vos. Mm-hmm. He was mentioned in the Obi-Wan show. You know, we know he survived for some time, I think, after Order 66. Maybe it's him. That would have been fine. but this was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there was also, like, a bit of maybe, like, you know, we sure have gotten a lot of Order 66 in the past couple years. So, honestly, this was not a scene that I was, like, super anticipating. Like, for me, it's, like, I don't really care if it's Quinlan Vos or Cal Kestis or, like, whoever.
You wouldn't have cared if it was California?
I mean, I would have had a reaction. but, like, this wasn't something that was, like, keeping me up at night. Like,
yeah.
And I just kind of expected the scene to, I don't know, like, we got, like, this, like, really intense Order 66 scene in the Obi-Wan show that was, like, pretty unsettling. And I don't know, like, I was like, oh, well, I mean, like, Order 66 stuff just kind of, like, has peaks there. For me. And then it's like, there's been like a ton in different like animated things. So yeah, this wasn't something I was like super anticipating. But it sure did deliver.
Yeah. So, the Jedi who was revealed to, you know, be the hero who saved Grogu from the temple during Order 66 is none other than Kelleran Beck, played by Ahmed fucking Best Ryan. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I love, I mean, we'll talk for sure about how much we love Ahmed Best and how earned and, you know, kind of satisfying it is to see him return to a high profile or very important anyway role in a Star Wars show. But I think ever since Kelleran Beck showed up as the host of Jedi Temple Challenge, people are like, were very happy and thought it was really cool. You didn't know that?
Wait, he plays a character on that, like, Star Wars Double Dare show? Like,
he does. Ryan, this is the second time in this episode. Yeah, you need to do your homework. This is the second time I'm telling you, Ryan. You have to do your homework. I have a lot of homework I need to do too, but that homework I've done, and I watched, I think, like, probably 75% of the episodes of Jedi Temple Challenge, and it was a fun show. But they created a Jedi. It was fun.
Okay. Oh, this is, I don't know, this is some brand synergy. I'm not sure how I feel, because, like, it's not like they're not, that show's not like storytelling. It's like kids from, like, Ohio come and do, like, a supermarket sweep temple run thing.
Well, yes, but the idea is, I mean, of course, it's a game show, right? But, like,
okay,
the idea is that, how do I put it?
Like, Jedi are real? Like,
well, the idea is that, like, when you watch Bozo the Clown, which was terrifying and weird, but, you know, if you were watching Bozo the Clown,
WGN, it's not, classic,
it's not like Bozo was like always like, hey guys, I'm not really a clown, like, I'm this dude who lives on the south side of Chicago, but I put the clown makeup on to do, you know, he's presented as a clown, right? And so, like, the Jedi Temple Challenge is presented as hosted by this Jedi, Kelleran Beck. There's a droid that, like, co-hosts the show with him, and it's all, like, in-universe, you know what I mean? Obviously, the kid, they're not like, oh, this kid's from Dagobah, and this other kid's from Coruscant, or whatever.
Okay.
But, like, there's an element of kayfabe there, for sure. Okay, let's put it that way. There's definitely an element of kayfabe there. Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's more like, you got to look at it, though, out of universe or like from a real world perspective. I think what it is this: when Scott Bromley and, you know, whoever else at Lucasfilm were putting together Jedi Temple Challenge, it was like, okay, we're going to have a Jedi host it. Who should we get? Oh, you know, it'd be great. Like, give Ahmed Best this moment, you know, give him this moment and let him inhabit this character. And so they did. And it was great. And I think he really enjoyed that. And I think it was a really nice thing for Star Wars fans and for Ahmed Best.
Yeah.
But a couple years later, hey, we need to have a Jedi save Grogu. Like, oh, what if we had Ahmed Best play that Jedi? Like, he already played a Jedi. So, you know, like, I think it makes sense on that level. It's just like, you wouldn't cast him to play a different Jedi, you know, and you're not, I mean, Ryan, you're pretty plugged into Star Wars and you didn't even know it was the same guy, Kelleran Beck, but like, why not? You know, it's like, okay, a fun Easter egg for those who know, but I don't think it's like anything more like yeah. And I guess like he played a character that was not strictly speaking super canon or whatever in that game show. And he's playing a different version of that character, or I guess like same name, same character, but like, I don't know, sort of like if you had Luke Skywalker from the films versus Luke Skywalker from, you know, an animated show for children or something. It's the same character, but like a different presentation or version of it. You know what I mean?
Okay, so like the other Jedi are like saying his name before you see him. So like, as soon as they started talking, did you like pop?
I did. Were not you? I think they just say like Master Beck or something like that, right? Like I thought
they were saying like get him to Kelleran
or Master Kelleran, maybe. Yeah, but I mean, hey dude, it's 5 a.m I'm emotional. I'm like, what's happening here? Who's gonna save Grogu? What's going on? And if they would have really stopped, looked at the camera and said Kelleran Beck is on the way, I think I would have like been like, wait, I know that name, and like run with it. But
okay,
but no, I did not until I saw him. I don't think I was picking up on the fact that that's who it was.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so yeah. I guess like that scene played out very differently depending on who you were, and you know.
Yeah.
And also, depending, like, if you didn't watch that show, like, it also depends on how much BTS prequel footage you've seen as well to even be able to, like, recognize Ahmed Best.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it took me a minute. Like, I'll be real. Like, it wasn't, like, instant for me. And because, like, also, like, it's a lot to process in the moment.
That's for sure, yeah.
Especially in like a super intense scene like that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I agree for sure. So yeah, but I mean, I, you know, I love the guy, right? I love Jar Jar. I've always loved Ahmed Best. Obviously, you know, some years back we learned kind of more details of how intense and difficult his experience around the prequels was. You know, we were there when he received a standing ovation at Celebration and all the, so, you know, to see him a couple times throughout the weekend in Chicago, just being, you know, I think overwhelmed by the outpouring of love that Star Wars fans were giving him, and to be, you know, among the fans who, I mean, as somebody who was just in the audience could really feel how much people wanted to welcome and celebrate and, you know, share that love with Ahmed Best. So, it's one of those things where like, if you were there, or I'm sure if you weren't there, if you were just watching it on the live stream or whatever, you could really sense just how intense that was. And, you know, at Star Wars Celebration, all kinds of Star Wars celebrities come out on stage. People always applaud. People are always welcoming. It was like on a whole different level, like a completely different level for Ahmed Best. And so, you know, knowing all of that and then seeing him have this moment was really, really great, you know. And I think from a storytelling perspective, his performance, you know, in the show, all that worked really well. It was all really good, but it's that extra sort of meta layer of knowing what we know about him and knowing what he's been through that makes it extra special.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the powerful part. I mean, I think like, yeah, in general, like this is just, it's just a really tight, intense, excellent Star Wars action scene. You have like You have lightsaber stuff. You have clone troopers. You have force powers. You have a chase through Coruscant that like looks awesome. And you just, I mean, you have this like just on its own, like this fantastic just Star Wars scene. And then his like, I don't know, like he has one of those like very kind of just simple but like iconic like lines of dialogue when he's just like, everything's gonna be all right, kid. Like, it just, I don't know, it just like really works. And you know, that's all he needed to say there. And and then you have like some great like Grogu reaction shots and him just trying to like figure out what's going on. And yeah, it's just a phenomenal scene in general. And then it's just like taken to this like higher meta level because of like who it is.
Yeah. And then it doesn't stop giving there either, because as they speed through Coruscant, a la Attack of the Clones, which was just visually really fun to see, when they get to the landing pad there, there is Naboo Royal Guards and a Naboo cruiser on the landing pad, which is like, whoa, what are we about to see? You know?
Yeah.
Which it turns out that's what we were about to see. The Naboo Royal Guard and the Naboo Royal cruiser, which is fine, but it was really exciting and fun. But it also suggests possible, you know, more Naboo, more Phantom Menace connections.
Yeah.
Like, that I love, you know, especially with Ahmed Best being the one who's, you know, delivering Grogu there. And then there's all these Naboo connections, which is like, I'm sure it's not meant to be like a nod to Jar Jar or Ahmed Best necessarily. But it works that way, you know, to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then even like on the way there, we fly through the Opera House area, I believe, and you see the mountain as well, which was just like a nice touch, you know, referencing the previous episode as well. Like this scene is just like loaded with like visual touches and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I guess you were saying that you were like half expecting Natalie Portman there and then realized that probably wouldn't be what's happening.
Yeah, I wouldn't say half expecting, but I was like, I was thinking to myself, like, oh my God, wait, like, it's Ahmed Best, it's Naboo cruiser. Like, could it be, like, when they go in the ship, will Padme be on the ship or something, you know? So my mind was racing, I'll put it that way. But yeah, then I was talking to a student about it at school later that day, and he pointed out, I didn't embarrass myself and say, oh my God, I thought we were about to see Padme, but somehow Padme came up and he's like, well, yeah, like, you know, or like through our conversation, I realized like, this is like in the middle of Order 66. Like, she's in her apartment, like crying, staring at the burning, Jedi temple. Although, yeah, and then she flies away right then, right? Like, doesn't she take off right then?
To Mustafar. Yeah.
Although, as I say that, and I don't even want this to happen, like, it would be way too much, it'd be insane, it'd be way too much, but doesn't she fly to Mustafar in a ship that looks like just like that?
Yeah.
Like, so, could there be, like, a quick, like, drop-off or, you know, plane exchange or something, and then, but I, you know, that doesn't seem like a thing they should do, but I'm just saying.
No, I don't think we need that.
No.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey, how many Royal Naboo cruisers are flying around Coruscant on the night of Order 66? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there could be a handmaiden. Could get Keira Knightley.
Eridae or Dorme.
Sade.
Dude, Sade. That would be cool.
So
Sofia Coppola could pop up. I mean, like, again, I don't think they need this or should do this, or, no. You know, I don't expect this, but like, Ewan McGregor could show up, Ryan. I mean, he just did Obi-Wan, you know, like, come on. Ewan McGregor could show up. I don't think it makes much sense, and,
yeah, but,
you know. Actually, never mind, because they pop off into hyperspace right away. They leave Coruscant, like, immediately.
Right.
Yeah, so never mind. We're not going to see any of those.
Are we supposed to be speculating on, like, who his friends are that he's taking Grogu to? Because he mentions, like, I have some friends I want you to meet. Did he just mean, like, the Naboo Royal Guards, or...?
I'd have to go back and look at that and see that line again. I don't know how he put that, or exactly what he said.
Yeah,
If he said, I have some friends I want you to meet, then, yeah, I would say we're supposed to be speculating about it. But the two times I watched it, I didn't necessarily feel like, oh, my God, they're really trying to dangle that carrot, necessarily. I just felt more like, as Star Wars fans, we're going to be like, oh my God, what's the next step? Like, where is he going to, like, where in the galaxy, you know, where is Grogu going to end up? I think our minds would just race at the possibilities, but I don't know if it was really, really super intentionally trying to be like, come back next week and we're going to tell you, you know, you're going to see a cameo, or I didn't necessarily feel like that was what they were doing.
Like, I don't know. Maybe some Bail Organa.
Bail Organa would make sense, although he's probably on Coruscant still, I would think. Although he'll be on Alderaan within a few days, because they're going to deliver Leia to him on Alderaan, you know, within a few days. But yeah. Ian, our friend Ian in our Discord, mentioned, you know, Oda Gunga, and is it possible they could go to Oda Gunga? And how insane and maybe too much would it be, but how insane would it be for Jar Jar and Kelleran Beck to interact with one another in a scene on Oda Gunga with Grogu?
would Jar Jar be there though, or would he still be on Coruscant?
Oh, you're right. He probably would still be on Coruscant.
But
you're right.
You know what? Like, a lot of these, like, I keep, like, thinking of things, and then I'm like, oh no, this person's here, or like, oh, I mean, that actor's 20 years older, which, you know, doesn't always prove to be a challenging thing for Star Wars, but sometimes it can come off as a little weird. But, you know, Boston Ass... you could just make Boston Ass again.
Oh, he would have to be there, wouldn't he? Or not have to be, but like, oh my God. For the first time, I just realized it's possible we could see Captain Tarples. Oh my God. That would be incredible. No, again, Jaja. I would love that.
Okay.
I love Captain Tarples.
Yeah. I mean...
I think Tarples was part of an AIM name I had many years ago, you know, on Instant Messenger. Yeah, I love him.
Nice.
He's got like the mustache of a catfish.
He's good. Yeah, I mean.
You were maybe thinking of some bigger names that we could.
No, I mean, the names don't get bigger than Boss Nass is what I'm saying. Like,
or Cap'n Tarples, but okay, sure. Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know what makes sense for Grogu.
That does feel like kind of an underutilized
location.
Like, location and characters in Star Wars. So, like, I don't know. I think it would kind of work.
Well, I think for sure. And also, it's like, look, at the end of The Phantom Menace, the Naboo and the Gungans made this, like, bond.
The orb.
Yeah.
Orb of friendship. Yeah,
it's not called that. It does have a name, though, right? Does,
of course it has a name, but I don't well, anyway, know what it is.
But then, like, you know, we never return to that, which we didn't need to return to that. We didn't need to, but I'm just saying, like, if the Royal Naboo Guard were like, we can hide this Jedi underwater in Oda Gunga, like, that would be...
That's actually pretty good.
It'd be a good... I mean, not long-term, but I mean, like, do we just got to take this guy somewhere, like, quickly? That would make sense.
And then, yeah, and then we would get, I mean, we'd get the fate of that city, of that society, because eventually the Empire ends up with Grogu.
Oh, well, I hope it's not like, I don't want that to be the reason he ends up there, so that the Empire can come in and destroy Oda Gunga. I would think, yeah, well, maybe, I don't know. But I would think, man, I almost unwish that he goes to Oda Gunga, because I don't want to see it get stomped out by the Empire. But
get
like I said, I would think it would be like, we just need a place to lay low for a little bit, you know? Yeah. I don't know that we would necessarily see how he ends up with the Empire or Moff Gideon or whatever this early. Like, I don't know that it's going to tell his whole, like, backstory, because that's how many years? That's 30 or 25 years ago or something, you know? So I wouldn't think he shows up, like, he could go to Oda Gunga the night of Order 66 and go a lot of other places before 25 years later in the opening episode of The Mandalorian, is what I'm saying, when he's with Moff Gideon.
Yeah. And we're talking more than 30 years, right?
Well, no, because it's basically the day, a couple days before Luke and Leia are born. And then A New Hope is 19 years after that. And then Return of the Jedi is a few years after that. So I'm thinking like 25-ish years, right? Something. Well, but then Mandalorian is like 5 years later,
yeah,
maybe. So like 30 years, I guess. 30 years. Is that what you said? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Ugh.
But either way, it's decades in between what we were seeing in that flashback and him ending up with Moff Gideon. I mean, it could have been with Moff Gideon that whole time, but I wouldn't really think so, because they're still poking at him and taking his blood, like, after 2 decades of him being like in Imperial control or whatever, you know, I don't know. So I would think he's got a lot of life that he lives in between, most of which we won't see on screen. But I don't know that where he goes now is necessarily going to be that indicative of how he ends up with Moff Gideon.
Yeah. True.
It could be. It could be like, hey, he goes to Oda Gunga and he chills there for 20 years and then they come find him, or 10 years and they come find him, whatever. It could be that, but I'm just saying it could be a lot of other things too.
Yeah. That's interesting. I've never actually really thought about this, because I never really expected to get Grogu's sort of pre-being found by Din story. I mean, like, I don't know. I guess it, like, makes sense in retrospect that eventually they would tell that story, but, like, it was never something, like, super on my mind.
Right. Yeah.
So I haven't really thought about it.
Right.
But that's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought too much about it either. But, you know, I think we're going to learn some. I mean, we're learning some of it now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that was fantastic. And then we cut back to the Dandalorians and their journey. Although it's mostly Mandalorians we recognize, I think, on the journey to get Ragnar Vizsla back, because
is
I think
that
it's
his
Paz
name?
Yeah, I wrote that down. Kid's name equals Ragnar, so somebody, I think Paz Vizsla says his name, Ragnar. But I think, is it just Bo-Katan and Din and Paz Vizsla that go off to save the kid? I think. No, maybe there's a couple others.
Because
when they're sitting around that fire, and they're eating. Or they're gonna eat, and when she asks about how do we eat with our helmets on, they're like, everybody goes off and we're so nobody else can see them, and eats, but you, because you're the leader of the party, you have the honor of staying by the fire. And it's Paz Vizsla who tells her that too.
Yeah
Which, I mean, wasn't he the one who was like super pissed in the past about people breaking the creed? So I mean, he tried to kill Din in Book of Boba Fett, right? Or at least defeat him.
That feels a little weird now, I think. Because, like, that was, like, a really intense fight. And now we've seen, like, the way that they, like, actually, like, train and, like, nurture each other and stuff. And it's, like, that feels a little weird.
Well, again, we're talking, you know, we've mentioned many times in the past on this show and even already tonight, the whole wrestling analogy. And, you know, sometimes once somebody makes a babyface turn, we just kind of act like the other stuff didn't happen, you know?
Yeah.
So it does feel a little bit like Bo-Katan, or not Bo-Katan. Well, yeah. Well, no. It feels like the Armorer and Paz Vizsla were kind of heels in Book of Boba Fett. And now they're babyfaces again, at least for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, but anyway, let's see. They basically, they, you know, rappel up or climb up this, big tower. They get up to the nest. Din uses his cool Mandalorian vision, heat seeking vision or whatever to figure out where the kid is in the nest. And, in a sort of tropey thing, like, The dad rushes forward. He can't wait. You know, they want to be smart about it. He can't wait. And three baby dragons pop up, you know, three little dragon foundlings themselves pop up. And then Mama Dragon shows up shortly after that. So it's a big, big dragon battle in the sky.
Yeah.
The young man, the Wesley Kimmel, Ragnarok, Vizsla is flying all over the place, but then again, kind of going back to Book of Boba Fett season or Book of Boba Fett and the confrontation between Din and Paz Vizsla, it is Din who rescues, you know, Paz Vizsla's son. There, he's the one who rocketeers down and saves him out of, you know, swoops him out of the sky or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. And there's a moment of real genuine gratitude when they land, and he's like, "Thank you." And then there's a nice moment between Paz Vizsla and his son as well. Are you hurt? I'm okay. They hug. So again, babyface.
Yeah.
Babyface Paz Vizsla at this point for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt bad for the dragon. I got to tell you, I felt pretty bad for the dragon when they.
Same.
You know, like, I mean, granted, he showed up and just totally snatched one of their kids away, but it was a cruel way to. I mean, they did what they had to do, but I felt really bad watching its wings, like, tied up and just, I'm glad I didn't have to just watch it drown. I guess it's good that there was always a bigger fish moment there where the other creature snacked on it.
So like, but they didn't technically kill it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, I just mean it would have been brutal to watch it just sink into the water and know that it's drowning, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather just see another animal eat it, you know?
Yeah. Nature.
Yeah. But a lot of Phantom Menace homages, reference, and love in this episode, because that's a total, there's always a bigger fish moment too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, basically after that climactic sort of scene, there's the kind of denouement or final sort of section of the episode, last few minutes, where they come back to the camp. Everybody's happy because, you know, little guy is rescued. What does the Armorer tell Bo-Katan? You have honored all of Mandalore, I think, is something that Bo-Katan says, or the Armorer says to Bo-Katan, and says her name. Like, Bo-Katan, you have honored all of Mandalore. Bo actually responds to the Armorer, this is the way. Mm-hmm. So certainly continuing that kind of thread from last week of, like, well, what's going on with Bo-Katan? You know, what is she thinking about the Children of the Watch? How seriously is she considering kind of adopting their ways? And all signs so far indicate that she is earnestly, you know, kind of taken, or yeah, interested in this, this whole thing. Like, maybe I'll give it a try. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where it's going, like we were saying earlier, like, this episode does a lot to set her up as a leader. And, you know, that's kind of her destiny is to be a leader of Mandalorians. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But do you think also a reformer as well, to a certain extent? I mean, It's hard for me to see.
I don't know. Like, the tone of the show is kind of weird, where like there, it's like gone really hard on like the, this is a cult, like you're supposed to be kind of like grossed out by these people. And then like the last two episodes, again, like it is a baby face faction right yeah. now. So
really interesting conversation. I guess this episode, I'm just going to plug the Discord constantly, but really interesting mm-hmm. conversation happening in there last few days. Ian, again, mentioned that he was listening to Blast Points and really appreciated that Jason and Gabe were talking about how, you know, the Children of the Watch are not actually a cult, and that, like, you know, kind of a little bit of empathizing with or trying to understand a little better their kind of whole thing, and that just because, like, all the positive things about them, like, look how dedicated they are to the Foundlings, and, you know, how helpful they've been, and, like, there's all this positive stuff about the Children of the Watch, especially here in season 3 of The Mandalorian. And I saw some other people online sort of pointing out that, like, the use of the term cult is not completely, you know, it's maybe not the best word to describe, like, mm-hmm. what they are. And then Dave, our guy Dave Hackerson, mentioned earlier this morning, actually, that, and I agree with him about this, a better term probably to use is fundamentalist, that they're very fundamentalist, right? They're very by the book. Yeah. They have to stick to a strict kind of code, which is not, you know, the same thing as a cult. The armorer tells, you know, Bo-Katan, like, you can leave anytime you want, you know, but, you know, if you stay with us, you're one of us, you know, if you want to leave, you can leave. Not that cult leaders never say stuff like that to, you know, members of their cults. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, I definitely understand the perspective of, like, hey, you know, that might be too strong of language to use. But still, I kind of think overall, at the end of the day, like, what is the point of the show? Is the point of the show that, like, Din and Grogu and Bo-Katan should get, like, more strict and more fundamentalist with their views on how to be a Mandalorian? That seems like a weird direction for the show to go in, you know?
Yeah.
So could it be for this season that, like, hey, they all kind of get on board together and they battle whatever this threat is, whether it's Moff Gideon or Thrawn or, you know, something else. But then in season 4, you know, like, there starts to be some kind of separation of, like, okay, wait a minute, like, these rules don't need to be this strict, or, you know, whatever else. I don't know. I'm interested to see. But for me, it's hard to think that the overall outcome or message is, like, yep, keep those helmets on all the time. Don't let anybody ever see your face. And Din, you really needed to redeem yourself for, you know, being a human being and rescuing Grogu when you did, or, you know, doing what you had to do to rescue Grogu.
Yeah. I guess my biggest question right now is to determine the theme and moral of the story, to make a prediction around this topic is, do we know how many people involved with the show are into Scientology?
I don't know of any that are, but okay. I've never heard that. Okay. So no, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I don't know. It is, like, it does feel like a kind of weird tonal shift. And even the fact that, like, suddenly people are having these conversations about, like, well, maybe we shouldn't call them a cult. Like, we've been calling them a cult for, like, 3 years now. And no one, you know, has ever kind of, you know, challenged that. And I think, like, it's
the, well, I'm sure people have. Maybe. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
I mean, no one in my circles, I guess.
Yeah.
But anecdotally, but I think it's the change in tone of the writing around these people, even compared to, like, Mandalorian season 2.5 in Book of Boba Fett, like. They were, like, not likable in those scenes, and it was like, this is so weird. Like, why are you people like this?
Yeah, but, you know, like, I think that I can see where if people are sort of thoughtfully looking at this and saying, okay, now, you know, they have flaws, and some elements of their creed and their belief system are flawed. But, you know, there's more good there than bad. I can definitely see that because, like, I think, like, hey, the point of the prequels is to show that the Jedi had lost their way. But it wasn't to be like, you know, there's a very obvious flaw with the Jedi here, which is that they are, you know, too strict in following their own rules and bureaucracy and have lost kind of their purpose. It's not like, so we're supposed to be like, oh, that cult of the Jedi sucks, you know, like they're awful or whatever. So I think, you know, people looking at the Children of the Watch and saying, hey, there's more good there than bad. And, you know, maybe we've been too quick to sort of say like they're, you know, just kind of judge them as like the villains to the Mandalorian villains, you know, or the obstacle to, you know, finding a better version of Mandalorianism or whatever. I can see that perspective at least.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm remaining a bit skeptical.
All right.
I don't know. Sure. 'Cause I think, you know, I think some of you might be setting yourselves up to get worked here.
Well,
but Christian Cage style. Oh, Paul White style, big show.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. And I could totally see them being kind of presented the way that works for whatever season and whatever part of the story is being mm-hmm. told too. You know, but that is a wrestling thing. Like, you know, a guy could be a dastardly heel, you know, one season, mm-hmm. and then, you know, a little while later, like all of a sudden, all it takes is a couple months off of TV, then you show up again or something else. Yeah. But, you know, like it could be as simple as that, like, oh, well, they had to get shoulder surgery, and now they're back a few months later, and it's like nothing ever happened. You know what I mean? We forget all
that.
They
have this great catchphrase and a new T-shirt. And
Yeah. Which I don't know if you saw online or not, Ryan, but KO Mania has really been elevated to even greater heights than usual this year. Kevin Owens always does a KO Mania shirt. And this year there was an amazing reveal because he and Sammy are going to be tagging at WrestleMania. And he gave Sammy a KO Mania shirt. And when Sammy turned it around on the front, it says WrestleZania. It was amazing.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was really
good.
I like that. Yeah, it was really good.
Those two dudes are phenomenal. And they great. Also go from face to heel.
I mean, that's a thing. Like
every other week. Yeah.
Kevin Owens has like, oh my God, the first time he turned heel on Sami Zayn in NXT, it was like, how could he ever come back from this? You know? And he's done heel and face stuff, you know? Anyway, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Back to the Mandalorian. we don't know what's going to happen with Bo-Katan, but I am enjoying all of this stuff with her and the armorer. And actually it gets deeper from there because, the armorer is making a pauldron for Bo-Katan because one of hers was lost in this battle with the dragon. And Bo-Katan is like, would it be okay if I had the Mythosaur on one pauldron and I had the the owl or whatever?
Night owls.
Night something, yeah. And the armorer tells her, like, hey,
you can always have
always
Mythosaur.
Any Mandalorian can rock the Mythosaur. It's it's universal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, that's probably some symbolism right there, right? Like Bo-Katan is kind of one foot in this Children of the Watch kind of style and one foot in her kind of way. And then maybe a meeting in the middle is what is ultimately going to be where things go.
Yeah. I felt like that scene was maybe a bit on the nose. Just like, I don't know, like it was just like a very, it was very, it felt like weirdly stilted in a way. Like that was just like one of those like, you know, scenes in Star Wars that just kind of play out a little awkwardly. And a little, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
But
sure.
It was fun. I mean, like I think like thematically it's important, but like there was maybe like a more subtle way they could have done that.
Sure. Well, I don't know about that. I guess like I can see where you're coming from. I didn't necessarily feel that way when I was watching it. Not to say that I was like, wow, the subtlety here is amazing or anything, but you know, I don't know that I felt it was like too heavy handed or anything. I mean, it was clear. It was pretty straightforward, but you know, I didn't necessarily have any issues with it, but I think I did really like the conversation after that, as that ended, because Bo-Katan's like, you know, hey, armor, like, you ever seen a mythosaur? Or like, you know, like, what if I told you I saw a mythosaur? And every time the armor is just like, that'd be cool. You know, and Bo-Katan's like, no, but what I'm saying, like, I really, like, I saw an actual mythosaur. And you know, the armor is like, well, hey, we see all kinds of things when we follow the path or whatever, you know, like, you might, who knows what you might see. And she's like, no, like an actual, like, I'm not talking symbolism here. I'm not like, I didn't have a vision, like, I saw a freaking mythosaur. And so I thought that conversation was pretty cool, because I thought the armor was being very armor was being very like, yeah, man, that's great. Like, you're doing great. You're doing awesome. You know? And Bo-Katan's like, no, this is not about whether I'm doing awesome or not. This is about, like, I freaking saw a mythosaur. And the armor is like, yeah, I mean, I guess you did. Maybe you did, you know? So it was very Zen, I feel like, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, it was real? Awesome. Oh, it was a vision? Awesome. Whatever. Either way, you're doing great. You know, I felt like that was like what the armor was saying.
Yeah, and I mean that I wonder if maybe she was like, I don't know, like something about this face turn is leaving me feeling a little weird. I'm not sure I buy it, and I think that scene, I hadn't really thought about it at the time, but now, like, thinking back to it, like, she was like just way into indulging Bo-Katan there, and for like a typically very a character that's very reserved with like praise and acceptance.
That's true, but like if we think back to that, the ending of that episode when Bo-Katan saw that mythosaur and she, you know, popped out of the water and it was like, whoa, I saw the thing. Like, I saw the symbol of the Mandalorian. Like, she was somebody who had lost her faith in the Mandalore, however you describe that. And that mythosaur symbolized and represented her finding it again. And so if she goes to the armorer and she's like, I think I saw the thing that represents the thing that you believe in so much. Like, I saw the thing that's representative of what I've hesitated to embrace and you really want me to embrace. Like, so I think it makes sense that the armorer would be like, yeah, man, like asking that question to the armorer is sort of like saying, I think I believe again. Right. Cause that's how we interpret it when she saw the mythosaur, that like, that would be something that would shake her to her core and say, maybe I believe again. And it's right after she asks the armorer, like, can I wear your, like, or not yours, but can I wear the real Mandalorian thing? Can I advertise that I'm a true believer in Mandalorianism? And then she's like, by the way, I saw a freaking mythosaur. I saw one for real. I just feel like the armorer would be like, these are the things you're supposed to say, Bo-Katan, as a Mandalorian. So yeah, I'm into it.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I'm not discounting that the armorer could be, you know, playing a part here. I'm not saying that's not possible, but I, you know, devil's advocate, I can certainly, like, I think it makes logical, motivational sense for her to respond this way too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, right, I could see it going either way. And I think it's the way it's written and performed. If it goes one way, we could look back at the scene and say that made sense. And if it goes the other way, I think we could look back at the scene and say it still works, you know, either way.
Yeah.
So,
cause I mean, there's still also, the chance of the Bo-Katan heel turn as well.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And so this would, you know, this would make the armor look like a mark if she got marked.
Yeah, so. I was quick to believe and embrace you, and then you were totally working us the whole time. Sure.
Yeah, which I don't feel like that one's as likely. It would, I don't know, but...
I think, to me, at this, if I'm making predictions at this point, I think they stick together this season, mm-hmm. and maybe even for more than one season, but I think eventually there has to be a tipping point where there's going to have to be... I feel personally, eventually down the road, there's got to be some resolution that's not just Din... Like, it can't be Grogu putting on a helmet for the rest of his life and saying, this is the way, I'll never eat in front of another person, right? That can't be, like, how it ends. Oh, so I think there's going to have to be some kind of revision of what the way is. I think there's got to be. And that is necessarily going to involve some conflict between somebody, some parties, right? So... four episodes left in this season, I don't feel like that's what's coming this season, personally.
Yeah, because they addressed the Grogu helmet thing in this episode, right? Like, didn't someone ask, like, why he didn't have to wear a helmet? And they said he was too young. Did I make that up?
No, you're right. There is something about that, because that's when... hold on. What's that line that I was repeating earlier? One doesn't speak unless one knows. I think, wasn't it the kid who asked, like, why aren't you wearing the helmet? And I think Din said, one doesn't speak unless one knows. And then Grogu schooled that kid. And then the kid's dad was like, one doesn't speak unless one knows. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's how it shook out. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there is no way that anyone in Disney marketing is going to allow for Grogu to have a helmet on for... the next three seasons of this show.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely, yeah, of course not. But yeah, I can't even imagine what it would look like besides stupid. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to look good. I don't know that they ever get to the point where they make a helmet.
Pretty metal. I don't know.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Pretty Beskar.
And we do have dragons in the Mandalorian now. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically okay. Lord of the Rings.
Well, I was going to say it's basically like, an 80s metal like a Dio album cover or something, you know,
a Manowar record.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
All right, well, do you have any predictions for next week?
I mean, what's even the point? Like, the episodes are so, like, wild. Like, the past 2 weeks have just been like, okay, well, I did not see that coming. Twice in a row, which I like.
That being said, I did see multiple, and one from Blast Points and one from another account that was even earlier, I think. But I saw people resurfacing multiple tweets where they were like, they were just like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if Ahmed Best, like, was the one who saved Grogu, you know, from like 2020. And then, so that's just kind of, I don't think anybody's arguing, like, I knew it all along. I think they're just, you know, it was a fun prediction.
Because that was the most, I mean, Jar Jar saving Grogu was the most ridiculous theory you could have.
And the most beautiful theory, too. Yeah.
And, you know, it turned out to be true from a certain point of view.
Yeah. Only prediction I would make is that I bet we see that Navarro footage in the next episode.
Gotta be. Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't say gotta be. I mean, it could be from the last episode. Last episode could be a big battle on Navarro. I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was next week. I would like to see or learn more about if there is something going on with, like, the, oh, that's a lot of TIE fighters for an Imperial warlord. Like, if that was hinting at something more than Moff Gideon, or if it was a reference to Moff Gideon. Like, I'd like to see. I think I'd like to see the Imperial element kind of reintroduced at this point, you know, and kind of a little bit of a conflict or threat there, I think, would be good.
We are at a very weird point, which I'm not, like, mad at, but, like, there just, like, isn't really an antagonist right now in this season. Which is fine, because I think they're telling cool stories, without that, but I think, like, eventually, like, someone's going to have to show up. I mean, there's whether it's Gideon or Thrawn or whatever, like, I mean, that's got to happen eventually, because we know that from the previous week's episode that it's likely that I can't remember her name, the New Republic former Empire lady who betrayed Penn Pershing.
Oh, you know Pershing's first name, Penn. Yeah, it was like Aliyah Kane, I think, or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Played by Katie O'Brien, who was excellent.
Liar Kane. Like, it's very similar to that. But
I heard it and I was like, is it Aliyah Kazan? Is it like a reference to Aliyah Kazan? Like, is that what it is? Like, I didn't know it. Anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, something tied to her eventually. But I don't know. But if they also just want to do some, like, weird, surprising episode that we can't even expect next week, I'm also cool with that. Like,
speaking of things you're cool with, Ryan, I'm going to give you an option right now. I don't think I can spend more than maybe 15 minutes recording, you know, here at this point. So we can either wrap up the show, or if we think we can limit a conversation to this news about Damon Lindelof to 10, 15 minutes-ish,
just
we could try
it.
To tackle that.
Let's just
you want to do it?
Yep.
All right. Okay, so we're going to talk briefly about the news about the Damon Lindelof Star Wars project, which is now no longer really that much of a Damon Lindelof Star Wars project, I guess. So I think this news came via Deadline first and then was expanded on by Variety. But it turns out that Damon Lindelof and Justin Britt Gibson, who were working together on a script for a new Star Wars movie to be directed by Charmin Obaid-Chinoy, that Lindelof and Justin Britt Gibson have left the project. They're not on it anymore. This is a movie that was supposed to take place post Rise of Skywalker. And, you know, I think they've been working on it for maybe a year or so. Certainly word has been like in the rumor mill for probably close to a year, at least I think, that Lindelof was having lunches on the Disney lot and working on a Star Wars project. And we'd be making a Star Wars project. And a lot of people, myself included, were kind of expecting that it would be announced at Star Wars Celebration in a couple of weeks. So, let's just start with the news that those two are no longer working on the project. How does that find you, Ryan? How does that hit you?
I think it sucks. I was actually looking forward to this. I think, Lindelof got his kind of big start on Lost, and that show, you know, had some problems towards the end, and ended up not being terribly satisfying, by the end, but I think in the time since then, he's, like, continually developed as a writer. I think, you know, the most recent thing I watched that he wrote / was the showrunner for was the HBO Watchmen series, which I thought was, like, brilliant as far as, like, genre fiction goes. So for me, I was like, yeah, like, this... And, like, he's, you know, even back when I was, like, reading Lost interviews every week, every time they'd come up, like, he'd always be, like, mentioning Star Wars and stuff. And, like, him and JJ bonded over Star Wars. And, you know, like, that's been such, like, a huge part of his, you know, inspiration and journey as a creator. And so I was very ready for like that dude's Star Wars at this point in his career. So I was actually really looking forward to it, but so I'm pretty bummed that it's not happening.
Yeah. So me too. Although I wouldn't go so far as to say it's not happening. I would just say that like he's not going to continue to work on it. And it's really interesting because there is already, it seems, another writer attached to that project, the same movie directed by Charmin Obaid-Chinoy, and I would assume working from the material that, you know, Britt Gibson and Lindelof have put together. So I would think it's an example or a situation where they wrote a first draft of the script. There's, I think, reason to believe that both Lucasfilm and Lindelof were not happy with it, because there's the comment, I'm sure you've seen the quote from Damon Lindelof, where he's like, look, when you care about something, I'm paraphrasing here, but when you care about something so much as Star Wars, unless you can make it great, you shouldn't make it at all. And he said, like, there was a point where I kind of felt like I came to the realization, maybe instead of being in the kitchen cooking, I should just be eating. So like, maybe I shouldn't be making a Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like you could read that a couple ways. I feel like you could read that like with him being very professional and just sort of being like, look, maybe it wasn't good enough. And I could see somebody saying, hey, maybe my thing wasn't good enough, being a little passive aggressive, or being like, well, they told me it wasn't good enough, so you know what? Maybe I shouldn't make it. I could read it that way, or I could read it him being like, I tried my best and I'm not happy with what I did, or I don't think it's up to the level it should be. So I'm going to leave. And as far, I don't work in movies, obviously, but I, from what I've heard from writers, and you know, read and things like that, it sounds like it's not completely uncommon, especially with a giant movie, for a writer to write a draft and then go work on other projects while other writers come in. And you know, sometimes you see a script for a big movie and it's got like six names on it, and it's not that they all sat in a room and wrote that script together. It's that one person wrote a draft, then the next person writes a draft, then the next person, you know, and it's kind of like a passing of the baton sort of thing. And I talked about this in our chat, but I know that's what happened with Rogue One, because multiple people who worked on Rogue One and aren't mad or like didn't get fired or, you know, there's no drama. They just, they wrote their version. Somebody else came in and wrote their version. Right. And so I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem to be that amiable of a situation necessarily, but I'm hoping it's not like, oh my God, it's a total disaster. Everybody hates each other. They got unceremoniously fired and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, there's different, like, there's been different levels of this in Star Wars. Like, you've had, you know, like, I think Force Awakens was like, you know, there was like a pretty solid story, but it wasn't like perfect. So then you got, you know, Kasdan to come in and, you know, do like the final, you know, the final stretch there. But then you have stuff.
But when it was first reported that Michael Arndt wasn't on The Force Awakens anymore, it felt like, oh, damn, this thing's falling apart. Like, they don't like this guy. You know what I mean? It didn't feel like, cool, it's just a standard part of the process or anything like that.
That's what we've found out in the time, if I'm remembering correctly, that, like, there are big chunks of Michael Arndt's
script. No, exactly. That's my point. That's my point, because what I'm saying is, like, right now, reading this story and hearing this news break, it feels like, shit, this movie I was looking forward to just fell apart and it's not going to work. But it felt that way in 2014 with The Force Awakens, and that wasn't the case at all. It was like, as far as I remember, it wasn't even a problem where they weren't necessarily happy with what he was doing. It was a thing where he was like, I need 18 months to write this movie. And they were like, you can't have 18 months to write the movie. So then J.J. and Lawrence Kasdan took over.
But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have episode 9, where they're like, this entire thing is like going in the trash, and like we're setting it on fire, and like there's nothing remains.
Very little. Yes.
The fact that it like follows this last thing. But there's a spectrum of this. And I think Obi-Wan was like, I don't know, like, it's sometimes it seems like that was like extensively rewritten for like the tone of this is wrong.
Yeah, I think Kathleen Kennedy made a comment like that.
Feels like a, and then like Solo had like weird stuff where we don't quite know like how much was retained there. So I think there's like a spectrum. So this could be anywhere on that spectrum, really.
Right, it could be. Yes, yes. So, but, you know, when you first hear, like, especially when it's somebody like Lindelof that people like, you know, I like him, you like him, you know, it's like, oh, man, it sucks that he's, you know, that's what you opened with, right? It's a bummer that he's not going to be doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And it is a bummer. It is a bummer for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I also kind of see people talking about it like, oh, well, that here's another movie that's not happening anymore. And this is not the case because now we know, we don't know, but we think that Stephen Knight, who apparently is one of the creators or the creator of Peaky Blinders, a show that has gotten a lot of love in this house. I've never seen it, but my wife loves that show. She loves
well
it.
Well received. Like it's very well reviewed and
Of course, you remember I told you that she just loves Pedro Pascal right now. She does and has loved Cillian Murphy to a very similar degree. So, you know, and it's from watching Peaky Blinders.
I mean,
so she loves
him. Like,
well, he's very good. You know, he's very good. I'm a bigger fan of Pedro Pascal than I am of Cillian Murphy. She also loves Paul Mescal from Normal People. Bigger fan of him than Cillian Murphy too. But he's good. He's good. I think it's because he's in all these Christopher Nolan movies and like, they don't really scratch an itch for me too much. I mean, they're good, but I just don't love them.
28 Days Later. It's in Danny Boyle movies, too. And he rules.
It's true, but I never want to watch that movie again. Sometimes it comes up like, hey, we should watch that. And I'm like, I don't want to hate myself again. You know, I don't want to just be sad. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's a great movie, though. So absolutely. One and done for me. But
Red Eye as well?
I don't know. Yeah. He's great. He's
great.
Super great. He's absolutely great. No doubt about it. I just watched the Control, the Joy Division movie, the other night. Does not star Cillian Murphy, but he almost played Ian Curtis in that movie. He was too tall. Yeah. But I gave us a deadline, and now I'm talking about freaking Cillian Murphy. It doesn't have anything to do with... Yeah. So, Peaky Blinders, Stephen Knight, he is apparently on this movie now.
Cool.
I mean, seems like
know.
A great writer.
I heard that show's good. So I don't know this. I mean, this isn't like a, it's not like, you know, getting, someone who I have like a history of like disliking, their stuff. It's not like the way my stomach dropped when I heard, Colin Trevorrow, kind of thing. So,
I'm telling you, you got to read that script sometime if you really want your stomach to drop. But I don't know anything about him either, but it's just like, okay, Lindelof left, that seems like a bad sign, you know, but another writer is picking it up. Okay, hey, it seems like it's still happening.
Same director.
At least. So. Same director.
Yeah.
And the writer that's picking it up, I mean, has a lot of cred. You know, I haven't watched his stuff. I don't know for sure, but like, it doesn't seem like a bad. The fact that Lindelof is gone seems kind of bad, especially because there's some additional reporting saying that they didn't like the script, they weren't happy with it. You know, and this is from the same source that originally, I forget the gentleman's name, so I apologize, but the same source that a year ago was like, Damon Lindelof is making a Star Wars movie. Like the person who knew that initially is also reporting now like, okay, well, Kathleen, you know, Lucasfilm, they did not like the script. They did not feel it was good enough. And the director didn't like it either is what this reporting is saying. Totally. Who knows if it's true? I mean, I don't even have the person's name in front of me. I shouldn't even probably be saying it on a recording, but that's like what the rumor is, you know? So that's not a great sign if the director and the producer are like, ooh, we don't like your script, but I'm sure there's gotta be great stuff in it. Right. Even if it's not working.
Yeah.
So, you know, you bring in another great writer and maybe they, you know, hopefully they develop it into something really good. I think the last question, Ryan, before we wrap up is like, what do we think the chances are? I know what your preference is, but like what the chances are that they're going to announce this in 2 weeks at Star Wars Celebration.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Like the pop you will get there is nothing compared to what the reaction will be if something doesn't work out with this movie when you know, and it's another like public or in the, you know, in the industry rags breakup of like the director leaving, the writer leaving, Lucasfilm not being happy with something, someone else taking over. Like it's not a good look. Just don't reveal the next movie until you have the next movie. Like until production has started is where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I guess I feel like if they do say something, it's because there's enough confidence to say it.
Is that how they feel every time?
Let's put it this way. Let's say that J.J. Abrams is making The Force Awakens or, you know, whatever Star Wars movie based off a script by a screenwriter. That screenwriter turns in the script and they're not happy with it, so they're going to bring in another writer to rewrite the script. But J.J. Abrams is still totally on board, and there is an idea and a movie they want to make. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't look at, like, oh, okay, the first writer left is like, nah, this movie's not going to get made anymore. Like, at a certain point, it's going to get made, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, depending on what this idea is, they're going to make it. They got to make another Star Wars movie, and they got to make something, like... They want to go post Rise of Skywalker. Like, why would this movie not get made?
That's what everyone thought about Rogue Squadron. Like, they had enough confidence in that to have this, like, you know, video of Patty Jenkins sitting, you know, by an X-Wing. And we're like, yep, this is the next Star Wars movie. This is definitely a thing that is getting made.
Yeah.
And they did this whole video thing, and there were interviews.
Touché.
All of this stuff, and then like just unceremoniously killed in the back. Like, yeah, I just
touche, but like
you're in production, like
touche, but like
no
hey,
reason to announce it now.
Yeah, okay, but like you say,
no benefit. You'll get just as much of a pop if you announce it at the next celebration or D23 once you're like finalized the script and are moving forward and everyone's schedules are cleared and like, yeah, there's no reason to announce it this early. Just wait. It's fine.
Okay. All right. Okay. I mean, you're probably right, but I think not announcing a new Star Wars movie at Celebration is also going to tell people, like, we don't have anything ready to go. Like, they're fumbling. They don't know what to do. Oh, my God. You know, like, there's that, too. I mean, like, people are going to write I think at this stage in the game, like, everything is going to be, not everything, but there's going to be a lot of negative press about Star Wars movies until another one comes out and is successful. Like, well, that stuff's going to happen no matter what.
Either way. Yeah. So, but I think
but if you announce a movie and people get excited about it, like, that's a positive thing. And if it doesn't fall apart, then awesome.
Can people get excited anymore?
I can.
It's like Boy Who Cried Wolf, like, every time.
I can.
Time.
I'm still excited about this.
I can't get excited until I know something's in production. Like, I was convinced that The Acolyte wasn't going to get made. And then, like, they finally showed something and, like, we got like, a little behind the scenes, some casting stuff, and I'm like, cool, I can officially be stoked for this. If you have that, like, if you have something concrete, like, cool. Like,
right, but like, I will be there. To me, I'm like, okay, well, they announced Andor, they announced Obi-Wan, they announced Rangers of the New Republic, they announced The Acolyte. They made all those shows except for Rangers of the New Republic, you know what I mean? And obviously they would have made them regardless, but you know, to me, it's not like I don't know that I would have been better off if they just never said anything about any of those shows until they were like on set making them, just because one of them in the end didn't happen, you know.
I think the shows are a little bit different than the movies, though.
I think you're right, but I think in this case we need. I feel like we need a. And it's different than announcing Rogue Squadron. It's different than announcing Taika's movie. It's different than announcing, you know, a lot of stuff. I think if they come out in 2 weeks and they're like, look, 10 years after The Force Awakens, we are releasing our next big Star Wars movie. It's set after The Rise of Skywalker. It's going to push things forward. And it's not a side story. It's not, you know, a spinoff. It is bringing Star Wars back to the movie theaters. And Sharmeen Obaid Shenoy is going to direct it. It has a script that, you know, Damon Lindelof worked on. We have Steven Knight working on it now. And I think that's okay. I don't think that it's, oh my God, like one of the guys that was writing it isn't writing it anymore. So like, it's this big cursed production or something. I think they can say like, look, this is, you know, this is a thing we're working on and this is the one, this is going to be the big thing that's going to bring Star Wars back to the movie theaters. Mm-hmm. And if they say that, I personally don't think they would say that if it's a Rogue Squadron situation. You know, you yourself, I was going to mention this a few minutes ago, you yourself were like, that didn't ever feel like the movie to be the one to bring Star Wars back.
No, you know? I'm glad Rogue Squadron isn't the next Star Wars movie. Like,
right. But then when we compare it to like Rogue Squadron fell apart, you know, they unceremoniously killed it. My point is like, I don't know that they ever felt about Rogue Squadron, or I should put it the other way. I think they may have a lot more riding on this project. They may have a lot more love for this project. They may be much more driven to make sure this one happens. And announcing it now, I think, would be an indicator that that's maybe true. If they don't announce it now, it's maybe an indicator that that's wishful thinking on my part, you know. But people will call me naive or whatever, but I trust them enough that if they come out and they announce this big movie, it's because it's happening.
Okay.
That's it.
I will call you naive because they've announced seven big movies that have not happened.
Well, I don't think they have announced one big movie that hasn't happened.
Well,
on the scale of what I'm talking about.
Three Ryan Johnson ones, Kevin Feige.
Okay.
The Game of Ryan Thrones guys, the Taika, the Rogue Squadron. Yeah.
Ryan Johnson, yes. I think that the other ones you're talking about are not... I don't remember Kathleen Kennedy walking out on stage at Star Wars Celebration and being like, look, guys, Kevin Feige's making a movie. This is the release date for it. Here's what it's going to be about. Like, it wasn't like that. It was like, in an interview, Kevin Feige's Star like, oh, I'm working on a thing.
Well, it was like a StarWars.com press release, wasn't it?
I don't think so.
I don't remember now.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that, like, they'll talk about stuff that's happening. And yes, like, they did announce that Taika was making a movie. They did announce that the Game of Thrones guys were making a movie or a series of movies. I guess that one felt pretty big. Mm-hmm. But I just think, like, when they announced even Rogue One or Solo, to me, that's not the same thing as announcing, like, what this movie could be. You know, when they announced Rogue Squadron, to me, that's not the same thing as announcing what this movie could be. So, yes, you're completely right. Of course, they've announced multiple movies that fell apart. But I hope that this movie, in their head, has a lot more in common with The Force Awakens than it does with Solo or with Rogue Squadron or something like that, you know, and that it's going to be something they're really putting all of their eggs in this basket. And I, you know, maybe there's some other movie that they feel that way about and it's not this one. That's a possibility too. But it just really, this for whatever reason, just feels like this is the big return to movies for Star Wars. And if that's the case, I think it's less likely to experience the lack of, well, not even the lack, I don't know. It's less less likely to fall apart.
The lack of existence.
Well, yeah, that's a good way to put it. The lack of existence. Yes. No.
Yeah.
I was gonna say lack of confidence, like, but.
Yeah. I would say, I think whatever happens, I think is going to be, whether a movie's announced, whether like a movie's coming sooner or later or whatever. I think the X factor in that is going to be Bob Iger returning. Mm-hmm. Like, he's come back. He's said, like, we need to return to traditional revenue streams. You know, movies are part of that. Physical media are part of that. And I could see, like, him just being like, I know you all wanted to take your time and get it right. You need to actually hit a release date for a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Like, this just needs to happen. So all hands on deck. This movie is going to happen. Or it could be like, or he could come in and be like, okay, well, wait till you get it right so we can have another Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Is also possible. So, but I think he is like the X factor in one way or another.
I think that's a good point. I'll leave you with this tasty morsel. The other rumor going around this weekend was that, yes, Damon Lindelof is off of this movie, but they're not only announcing this movie, but they're announcing two other movies at Star Wars Celebration in April. So we'll see. That is a rumor, Ryan. So I am very interested to see what's going to happen, as I know you are too. So
okay, I took the day off work. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not,
you didn't take it off for them to announce two new Star Wars movies, right? You took it off to hear about three new Star Wars movies.
I didn't take the day off of work to hear updates on Ahsoka. Like, I'm telling you that much. Like, I do have some hope here.
Okay.
And, so I am also a little bit naive, but I also do feel like there's a possibility. So, and I just needed to use some PTO days.
There you go. There you go.
But yeah, figured like as good of a day as any.
All right. Fair enough. We got to go, Ryan. I got to wrap this up. It's Sunday night. Yep. Time to shut it down. Close it down. Mm-hmm. But I do think we'll be back in a more timely fashion this week with our next episode following The Mandalorian, because we're on spring break. So that should be good. Yeah. So, until then, thanks very much for listening. You can find all of our previous shows, blog posts, etc. at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. If you want to reach out to the show, you can email us at blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at blockaderun. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at
Vaya Malay, VayaMalay, and Standard Definition Gaming, DefStan 480.
Yeah, and as I mentioned a few times during the show, come join our Discord, and you know, we'll be chatting Star Wars on a daily basis in there, and there will be a link in the show notes, and there's a link on our website, blockaderunnerpodcast.com, if you want to join our Discord. So, with that, thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner Podcast.